Welcome to Light in the Land, where we illuminate the Bible within the context of the land of Israel. Each week, we uniquely dive into biblical passages using archaeology, history, geography, customs and culture of the biblical period, and the Hebraic background of Jesus, guiding you along ancient paths and into biblical towns and landscapes is Dr. John DeLancey. He serves as the founder and director of Biblical Israel Ministries and Tours, and has led over 90 Israel study trips to date, as well as participated in many archaeological digs. We pray this program connects you to the land, deepens your understanding of the Bible, and inspires your walk of faith in Christ.
Shalom, hello, and welcome to Light in the Land, where we discover the Bible through the lens of Israel's physical settings. My name is John DeLancey, and I will be serving as your host and teacher for this weekly audio ministry program. Thanks so much for tuning in to this station, or if you're listening to this teaching via podcast. It is really with great excitement and deep appreciation that you have joined us for this program. We indeed hope that this will be of encouragement to you and also an eye-opening, inspirational time of seeing the Bible come to life in special ways. In case you missed our last week's episode, we did talk about the regions of the Bible, and in part, we want to expand on that in this program. And we also want to expand on the 1 Samuel 17 story involving David and Goliath. Not much detail was offered last week in our introductory program, but we'll spend time in unfolding this story as well together. Incidentally, we want to use this story from 1 Samuel 17 as a way to illustrate how the understanding of the physical settings of the Bible can really bring to life a biblical narrative or story from both the Old and the New Testaments. Depending on how one counts them, there are approximately 15 geographical regions in the biblical land of Israel that we can identify. Each region has unique topography, elevations, flora, fauna, weather conditions, and precipitation. In fact, they feel different in these ways as well. When you stand in the desert of Judah, in contrast to the lush Jezreel Valley of the north, or as you stand and see the majestic Mount Hermon from the Golan Heights, it all feels different. It not just looks different. It has various dimensions, unique characteristics, and certainly when we place the stories of the Bible onto the map of Israel, given the unique regions of the Bible, it really helps us to understand how people lived, the backdrop of each narrative, and certainly brings us to a greater awareness of the conditions that were present during the time that story or narrative took place. So when we understand these incredible, diverse regions, it indeed enhances our understanding of each biblical narrative. So from south to north, the regions include the southern highlands, the Negev Basin, the Judean Desert or wilderness, the hill country of Judah, the Shephelah or the lowlands of Judah, the coastal or Philistine plain, the Sharon plain, the hill country of Ephraim or Samaria, the Mount Carmel range, the Jezreel Valley, the Jordan or Rift Valley, the Lower Galilee, the Upper Galilee, the Hola Basin or Valley, and the Golan Heights. These regions are, again, unique in their own way. And when we take a look and travel through the land of Israel, we'll notice the differences quite dramatically. Now, once again, Israel is a small country. It's about the size of New Jersey, 300 miles in length, and at its widest point, it's only about 75 or 80 miles. Now, that's quite a small parcel of land in comparison to, for instance, Egypt to the south and west, and Jordan to the east of the Rift or Jordan Valley. This would also be east of the Dead Sea and the Sea of Galilee. The country of Syria to the north and east of the Golan Heights, and Lebanon to the due north of Israel's northern border. So Israel is the land between the Egyptians to the south and west, and all the people groups and Israel's enemies throughout the biblical time period of history. And this would include the people groups of the Mitanni, the Hittites, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Persians. We can also throw in there the Arameans as well, because they were, during the times of the Old Testament, quite challenging to the northern country of Israel. Let's remind ourselves also that during the divided kingdom that began in 930 BC, the northern kingdom called Israel and the southern kingdom called Judah, they were again challenged by their not so nice neighbors, and this would be the groups of people called the Moabites, the Ammonites, the Amorites, and the Edomites. So now let's return to these regions that I just mentioned and talk about them a little more specifically. Again, we'll go from south to north. First, the southern highlands. It is at the very southern end of this land of Israel, the Red Sea, and everything to the north. The Arava, which is actually the valley that extends from the Dead Sea to the Red Sea. Everything to the west of the Arava is technically the southern highlands. The area is very arid, very rugged, desert-like. It only receives about 4 inches of rain a year. But just to the north of the southern highlands is the Negev Basin. The towns of Beersheba and Arad are the two primary biblical towns located on the northern edge of the Negev Basin. It receives about 8 inches of rain a year. It's primarily a plateau, a higher plateau, but it is very arid as well. The Judean Desert, which is north of the eastern part of the Negev, is yet another region, our third region, and this indeed is a desert. It borders the western shoreline of the Dead Sea, and it extends at least 40 miles to the north. Cities like, or palace fortresses, as Masada was back in the days of Herod, the oasis of En Gedi, one of only a few oases in the area, and then Qumran and Jericho, located in the Jordan Valley. The desert of Judah only receives a few rain events each year. It's to the east of the hill country of Judah, which is our next region, specifically, as we talk about now, the Judean hill country being about 3,000 feet in elevation. I mentioned this earlier in our program today. The distance between Jerusalem, for instance, and Jericho is only 18 miles, or a couple more miles to the Dead Sea, 20 or 21. The difference in elevation is over 4,000 feet, whereas the Dead Sea, on the edge of the Judean desert, is 1,400 feet below sea level. Jerusalem and Hebron, a city to the south, Bethlehem is in between, is about 3,000 feet above the sea level of the Mediterranean. To the west of the hill country of Judah is the Shephelah. It'll be a part of our story very soon as we talk about 1 Samuel 17. The Shephelah serves as the lowlands. It's characterized by smaller hills and valleys that proceed from the west to the east. There are five primary valleys in the Shephelah: the Ayalon Valley, north to south, the Sorek Valley, the Elah Valley, the Beit Govrim Valley, and the Lachish Valley. Numerous Canaanite and Judean cities were located on these valleys for strategic purposes. And then to the west of the Shephelah, bordering the coastline of the Mediterranean, is the coastal plain, sometimes called the Philistine Plain. This primarily is at sea level, of course, and the five Philistine cities were located here. We'll mention them shortly. North of the coastal plain, north of Tel Aviv today, Israel's second largest city, is the Sharon Plain. The remarkable Herodian city of Caesarea is located on the Mediterranean coastline in this region. To the east of the Sharon Plain is the Mount Carmel Range. The Mount Carmel Range is a range of about 1,500 feet above sea level, and it extends about 13 miles from the northwest to the southeast. Just below and to the south of the Carmel Range is the hill country of Ephraim or Samaria. It extends north from Jerusalem through the areas including the cities of Bethel, Michmash, Shiloh or Shiloh, Shechem or Shechem, and Samaria. To the east of the hill country of Ephraim or Samaria is the Jordan River Valley that extends 65 miles north of the Dead Sea all the way to the southern end of the Sea of Galilee. The Jordan River meanders longer than 65 miles, but the distance between the northern tip of the Dead Sea and the southern tip of the Sea of Galilee to the north is about 65 miles. Now let's return to the east of the Mount Carmel Range to Israel's largest valley. It's called the Jezreel Valley. It's a larger valley consisting of lots of agriculture. Again, Canaanite and Israelite cities like Yokneam, Megiddo, Tanakh, even cities located on the hills of the Hill of Moreh like Shunem and Nain, mentioned in the Old and New Testaments. And then on the northern edge of the Jezreel Valley is the ridge of Nazareth, the hometown of Jesus, which technically begins the Lower Galilee. To the north of Nazareth are cities like Cana and Sepphori. The Lower Galilee extends all the way to the Upper Galilee, and the Upper Galilee extends all the way to the Lebanon border today. To the east of the Lower Galilee is the Sea of Galilee Basin, technically its own region. It too, like the Dead Sea, is below the sea level of the Mediterranean. The Sea of Galilee is about 690 feet below sea level. We pick up many of the stories of Jesus and his ministry along the shoreline of the Sea of Galilee, in places like Capernaum, Chorazin, Bethsaida on the north end of the lake, and even Magdala, even though it's only mentioned once in Matthew 15. North of the Sea of Galilee, it extends to the north, to the Lebanon border, a valley called the Hula Valley. The Hula Valley is to the east of the Upper Galilee. And then finally, the last region, if we're counting them, 15, is the Golan Heights, a territory that extends 38 miles from the southern tip of the Sea of Galilee on the east side of the lake, all the way up to Mount Hermon, Israel's highest mountain. It extends 38 miles bordering Syria to the north and east. I didn't mention that to the east of the Jordan Valley itself, between the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea, is the country of Jordan, though the country of Jordan extends all the way south to the Red Sea. These are the regions of the land of Israel, and each region will play a very significant role in helping us unfold the stories from both the Old and the New Testaments. So now let's take a deeper dive into the one story of 1 Samuel chapter 17. It's a great story that illustrates how the topography and the geography help us understand the context, the backdrop of this exciting narrative. Now, I have to say that the 1 Samuel 17 story involving David and Goliath is one of my favorite stories, and perhaps one of yours as well. It teaches us some very important life lessons about trust and how David was used, even being a small but no doubt sturdy shepherd, and yet God used him to defeat, in this case, the giant called Goliath and his fellow Philistines. But this story is one that really, I think, is set apart in the Old Testament to illustrate how understanding the land and the topography and the geography and even the geology of the region of the lowlands, the coastal plain, and the hill country of Judah, how an understanding of these regions bring really to life the story that's preserved in 1 Samuel 17 about the conflict between the Israelites and the Philistines. Perhaps we have heard the story of David and Goliath before. It's really a remarkable and lengthy story in that 17th chapter of 1 Samuel, but essentially the story was all about the control of the Elah Valley. Already there were Philistine cities on the west end of the Elah Valley. They had primary cities like three on the coast. These would be Gaza, Ashkelon, and Ashdod. And then off the Sorek Valley, the city of Ekron. But on the western edge of the Elah Valley was the city of Gath. Perhaps Gath is familiar to you because that's the hometown of Goliath, who was a tall, rather tall, Philistine. Now, we'll talk more about who the Philistines were in later programs, but just for a brief word, they were an Aegean people group from the Greek islands who came to the coastline of Israel approximately 1200 BC. They settled there in these five primary cities that they developed, but there were more Philistine cities. They brought with them their own culture. But they settled very closely to the region called the Lowlands or the Shvelah of Judah. Apparently, according to the archaeological record, Israel maintained control of most of the Shvelah. But the Philistines had great ambition to pursue further east into the hill country of Judah. All of these regions play a very significant role in the story that would unfold in this 17th chapter of 1 Samuel. So as the Philistines pushed eastward and set their camp on the south side of the narrow part of the valley, according to the Hebrew reading of the first few verses of 1 Samuel 17, and as King Saul and the Israelites set up their camp, most likely on the northern end of this narrow part of the valley, although others would suggest the further east position, it's Goliath who stood taunting every day these Israelites. And the Israelites were certainly intimidated by Goliath, who, according perhaps to one archaeological friend of mine who I actually had the privilege of digging with, he suggests that Goliath was as tall as a typical chamber gate was wide. In other words, he was as tall as one of these massive fortification gates that can be found in numerous cities throughout of Israel. And yet David was this shepherd boy from the hill country of Judah, specifically from the town of Bethlehem. And he is the one who brings a care package for his brothers who are part of Saul's army. And as Paul Harvey would once say, you know the rest of the story. David came armed with a few rounded stones that he gathered from the riverbed, and armed certainly with the strength that he found in God, the confidence that he placed in God. He not only killed the giant called Goliath, but he cut off his head, dishonoring and humiliating the enemy completely. At the end of the story, the Israelites pursue the Philistines through the gates of Sha'arayim, perhaps two paths, past the site of Azekah, as the Philistines retreat to Gath and Ekron. It's a story where, from different vantage points in the Elah Valley, whether you're standing on top of Azekah or Sukkoh, or Hirbet Keyafa, an archaeological site on the north side of the valley, you see the battlefield right in front of you. To be able to understand the topography and the geography of the story enhances our understanding why it even took place. As we bring this program to a close, it is appropriate for me to read portions of the end of chapter 17 of 1 Samuel, because we understand that David saw the challenge in front of him, Goliath stood there day after day taunting the Israelites. And yet here comes David, initially bringing a care package for his brothers. And yet he would be the one to say, yes, I'm the one to confront Goliath. I think King Saul had his doubts, but ultimately David, with great confidence, approached this giant armed with 5 stones and a full confident spirit in God. Here's the rest of the story. David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands." As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly toward the battlefield to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. This brings us to the end of this program. Once again, thank you very much for joining us, and I hope you tune in for our next program as we illustrate the Bible through the physical settings of Israel. Shalom, and take care.
Thank you for joining us for this program. We hope it was enlightening and inspiring. If you have questions, you can email Dr. John DeLancey at drjohn@biblicalisraeltours.com. We invite you to visit our website, biblicalisraeltours.com, where we have resources about Israel and the Bible, select images from today's program, along with links to our YouTube channel featuring on-location teaching videos from the land of Israel. Additionally, our site also has information about upcoming trips throughout Israel and other biblical lands. A tour of the Holy Land will transform the way you read and understand the Bible, as it has for thousands of others. Until next time, thanks for listening, and Shalom.